Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
It's the Back Nine Boys Golf Show. All about golf, from putting to driving, from hooks to whatever. Now, here's your host of the Back Nine Boys Golf Show, Rich Stiles.
Welcome to the show. Good morning. Back Nine Boys is brought to you by Bridgestone Golf. Play the Tour B ball with Mindset Technology, by the club at Sea Palms, by PXG, you've never played like this before, by RSM, proud sponsor of the RSM Classic, giving back to our community, by Stitch Golf, dress your game, and by CJ's Italian Restaurant, voted best pizza, known for their deep dish and thin crust, and much, much more. All of it is mouthwatering. Check out their full menu at CJsItalianRestaurant.com. Our guest is Jeff Fages, who is with the Georgia State Golf Association. And Jeff, you've got a pretty big, interesting agenda for 2026, and a lot is coming. I mean, some big events.
Yes, Rich, thanks for having me on today.
Always a pleasure.
We have an incredible 2026 schedule lined up. The highlight of that schedule would be the 105th Georgia Amateur Championship, which is played in June. And that's actually going to be at Ocean Forest Golf Club there on Sea Island, Georgia. It's open to GSGA members, Georgia residents, males with a handicap index of 10.0 or below. It opened up just about 2 weeks ago for entries. And we have over 800 players that have signed up already.
Oh, my gosh.
We're so excited. We have a great relationship with Ocean Forest. The GSGA helps out with the Jones Cup Invitational. I was just down there last month. Unfortunately, we had 5 hours and 15 minutes worth of fog delays last month for that event. Hopefully, we won't have to deal with that coming up in June. But we're super excited to get to Ocean Forest. It's the first time they're hosting the state amateurs since 1998. So the club does a phenomenal job. The director of golf, John Wade, and the golf course superintendent, Lucas Walters, and the entire staff there, they are ready to put on a show. They're going to give the 144 players that make the final field, they're going to give them that Jones Cup experience, which is known so well. And it's going to be a phenomenal championship week in the middle of June.
Well, obviously, Ocean Forest, ever since the redo by Bo Welling, has been just rave reviews from everybody. Let me ask you this. Out of the 800 entries with handicaps of 10 and below, how many people are actually going to be able to play?
So when it's all said and done, by the time entries close in April and we have a last chance qualifier in June, we're expecting to have probably close to 1,100 to 1,200 players that want to try and play in this championship. Right. The final field is going to be 144 players. So we have a mix of players that are exempt through various categories and those that make it through qualifying. We have 15 different qualifying sites set up throughout the state of Georgia that takes place in May. But the final field will be 144. So it's going to be extremely, extremely difficult to qualify for this championship. And certainly it speaks to not only the quality of championships that we're able to run with the Georgia State Golf Association, our rules and competitions team is phenomenal, but also it speaks to Ocean Forest and the reputation they have for excellence.
Well, yeah, that'll be incredible. That's about 10-13% of the entries of if it goes to 1,100 that will be able to qualify. That's just interesting.
Yeah, by the time you take out the exempt players, the qualifying percentage for those, you know, players that have to go through qualifying, it's probably going to be close to 8 or 9%. So,
wow.
You know, you're looking at a 78 player field for qualifying, where maybe six guys qualify, somewhere in that neighborhood. So it's going to be extremely tough. You're going to have your A game with you no matter what.
Yeah. On every shot too.
Yep. There's no letting up, and that's, you know, it's going to prepare you for Ocean Forest. Ocean Forest is very unforgiving. It's a very challenging test. We're going to have it set up to present a very similar test to the players, to those players that might play in the Jones Cup. I've never seen Ocean Forest in the summer, so I'm so used to seeing it the first week in January. So it's gonna feel quite different, but I expect the golf course to still play quite challenging, no doubt.
You probably won't need your heavy jacket, but you might need some kind of a short sleeve shirt. I'm sure that'll happen.
I will leave the heavy jacket at home and bring lots of sunscreen for sure.
Well, that's not your only big event coming up in June. You've also got the Georgia Women's Amateur Championship, and that's up at UGA's course, Athens.
Yeah, that's going to be at Athens Country Club. This is the 97th Georgia Women's Amateur. It's going to be actually the week before the Men's Amateur. So we're there June 1 through 3. The winner of this championship receives an exemption into the U.S. Women's Amateur. We're excited. We haven't been to Athens Country Club in a while, not since the 2018 Georgia Men's Amateur, but it'll be the fourth time that Athens Country Club has hosted the Women's Am, and the first time since 1998. So we expect a field of probably somewhere between 100 and 120 players. It's set up a little bit differently than the Men's Am in that we don't have qualifying. But we do take the low 120 players that sign up to play. I think we're about half full already with 61 players that are signed up, and we've got some great names, and really looking forward to being there for a very strong championship.
Well, and Athens Country Club is not an easy golf course. I know in conversations I've had with Coach Hack, I've asked him, what is your secret sauce of putting out such great players for UGA? And he said, I'm not telling.
Yeah, that's right. Athens Country Club has a great history. It's a old Donald Ross design. The superintendent there, his nickname is Pooster. He does an amazing job. The golf course is going to be in absolutely perfect condition come the beginning of June. And the club's very excited to host. I'll have to say probably one of the favorites to win is going to be Catherine DeLoach, who's going to be a freshman at Georgia Southern next year, but she's a member of Athens Country Club, so she's got that home course advantage. We'll see if that we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, it usually does help quite a bit. But you've also got another events that are open for registration. Tell us about those, Jeff.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago we opened up the first part of our schedule, so open for entries right now, and all this information can be found at our website at gsga.org. But our four-ball tournament, which is a two-man event, that's going to be played at Sanctuary Golf Club at the end of March. That's designed for players with a total team handicap index of 4.0 and above. So it's a flighted event, guys playing four-ball. It's a great way to kick off the year. You know, we come out a winner, maybe the clubs have been collecting dust for a little bit, and what better way to get things back in motion than an event where you have a partner. We also are going to Jekyll Island to see the new Great Dunes course. That's just got a ton of rave reviews since they opened back in November. I've been there a couple times to take a look at it, and really excited to get our Tournament of Champions down there. So our Tournament of Champions, Rich, is open to club champions from GSGA member clubs. So we have four different divisions. We have a men's division, a senior men's, a women's, and a senior women's division. So if you are a GSGA member and a club champion of one of your home club in one of those divisions, then you can sign up to play in this event. We're excited to get down to Jekyll middle of March. And then in addition to that, the other thing that's open right now is our senior and super senior match play championship. That's going to be held up here in the Metro Atlanta area in April, right after the Masters. So we usually fill that up. We take the low 60 seniors and 60 super seniors by handicap index. And that's a great event. We have stroke play qualifying that pairs down to match play. So that's another great, great format. Match play is often not talked about enough and not played enough by people, but it's a great, great format for championship play.
Yeah, it really is. And last year, 2025, I know in conversations that I've had with you and with Matt, it was a record year for the Georgia State Golf Association.
Yeah, it was unbelievable, Rich. We've been on this tremendous golf boom the last 5 years or so, going on 6 years now since COVID. And 2025 was a record year for us. We set a record in terms of total number of entries for all of our competitions. It was close to, I think it was over 5,000 when you factor in all of our events, 5,000 competition entries. We also set individual records for our Georgia Amateur, our Georgia Junior, our Mid-Am, and our Match Play, and our Girls Championship as well. So we're just looking to continue that. We've got a great slate of competitions and host sites for 2026, and let's get out and get out and play, and let's break more records.
And get out and join the GSGA. You're also going to come up to Lookout Mountain for the first time. Tell us a little bit about that. That's coming up in the fall.
Yeah, we're so excited about this. Lookout Mountain is a unique golf club. It's an old Seth Rayner design. They're actually a dual member of the Georgia State Golf Association and the Tennessee Golf Association. The golf course is in Georgia, but they're so close to Tennessee. I think maybe part of it might be in Tennessee, and it's very close to the Chattanooga area. It's just a unique opportunity. We've had developed a little relationship with the club, and they're going to host our Georgia Mid-Amateur Championship the second week in October, which if anyone's been up in the mountains up there before in October, it is going to be spectacular in terms of just the overall experience, the views, the leaves changing, and the weather. It's a great opportunity. We're excited to go up there. The buzz with the mid-amateur players is already high. I'm sure once we open entries for that in the next couple of months, we're going to probably set some records there as well.
Jeff, let me ask you, on some of these qualifications, you have to have a handicap index of 10 and below. Do you know if anyone with a 10 handicap has ever won the Georgia State Amateur?
Ooh, that is a great question.
Probably not would be my answer.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say probably not. Yeah. However, I will venture to guess that somebody close to a 10 has probably at one point played in and or qualified for the state amateur with that type of index. But in terms of winning, I would doubt it. The quality of play with our state amateur championships, both the men and the women, is absolutely unreal right yeah. now. Our Georgia Amateur, Rich, was the highest ranked amateur in the entire country last year in terms of the Wagger power rating. Right. And our women's amateur was just number two, only behind California. And it's not even a fair fight when you talk about the number of people that they have in California compared to what we have in Georgia. So just the quality of play that we have here in Georgia is absolutely mind blowing.
You know, it's interesting with the growth of golf since 2020 and the growth that y'all have had in your biggest year last year. It just amazes me the number of people that are going to qualify or try and qualify or enter these tournaments to try and win, because it's a pretty big event for them to try and get into, and more importantly, to win. I mean, it can kind of make your career.
It sure can. We're very fortunate the support that our rules and competitions team has from Matt Vanderpool, our CEO, and from our board, to be able to do the things that we do with our championships, to make them first class and desirable, and to be able to provide the players the experience that they have. you know, they just want to keep coming back again and again and again. And we're just very fortunate and thankful that our members love to get out and compete. You certainly have to have a different mindset to compete at that level. I certainly don't have it. I mean, I'm a 13 handicap and I play maybe 10 rounds a year, but watching these players, these elite level amateur players compete is very special.
Well, Jeff, thanks for being with us. Great events. Looks like a great 2026 for the GSGA. Thanks for giving us all the information.
All right. Thanks so much, Rich. Just encourage everybody to get out and play, and all the information can be found on GSGA.org.
This is John K. Solheim from Ping Golf, and you're listening to the Back Nine Boys.
Welcome back. I'm Rich Stiles, and we're with Jim Nugent, the CEO of Global Golf Post. And Jim, welcome back to the show.
Rich, thanks for having me on today. I appreciate it.
Well, there's a lot going on in the last couple of weeks, even since your last publication came out online. Interesting articles about LIV and the PGA Tour. What are your thoughts on Brooks coming back?
Well, he signaled that he was going to. His unhappiness with the LIV situation was kind of a poorly kept secret. And it was complicated by his family situation. His wife had a miscarriage at some point last year.
Right.
Increasingly, though, people believe that he had an option to get out, because otherwise there really was no reason for LIV just to let him walk. On the whole, though, I think it's a positive for the PGA Tour. He certainly was well-received by the fans in San Diego over the weekend. His game's a little rusty, but he's too talented to let that linger. I think he'll be a factor here pretty quickly.
How does that follow your thoughts on Patrick Reed, who will be back towards the end of the year, and Hudson Swafford is also going to be coming back next year after being off for a couple of years playing golf?
I'm not sure Hudson Swafford moves the needle all that much, but more power to him. The Reed thing also was signaled, although not for as long as the Brooks Koepka signaling went on. It was revealed just the week before Reed made news, or a couple of days before, really, that his contract was up. And I think when Brian Rolapp, the new CEO of the PGA Tour, got wind of that, I think he moved very, very quickly to try and find a path back. And it was made easier by the fact that, and not a lot of people knew this, and I don't think I did, Reed never really got sideways with the PGA Tour, because he resigned before he hit a single shot on LIV. So he wasn't part of the lawsuit. He wasn't violating any policies. He had officially given up his membership, and therefore has a path back that most people were unaware of.
Do you think, and many have said this, that with the opportunity is this to come back on the tour to the LIV players, to the four LIV players, Brooks being one, Rahm being one, Smith being one, and Bryson, do you think that that deal was specifically written for those four players by the CEO
unquestionably, really they really don't need anybody else. Not sure right. They really want anyone else. When you think about some of the guys that are playing LIV, a bunch of them have effectively aged out and really aren't competitive any longer. Lee Westwood, right. Ian Poulter, Phil Mickelson, Sergio Garcia, those guys are not competitive on the PGA Tour any longer. And then some of the younger guys that they've signed, some of these college players like Michael Lasasso most recently, they're not going to move the needle on the PGA Tour. So, you know, I think they'd like to have Rahm. I think they'd like to have DeChambeau. I don't think there's really any interest in Joaquin Niemann. And I don't think there's a whole lot of interest in Cam Smith, although he did fall inside the lines and the deal was offered to him.
Right. What do you think Bryson's going to do? I mean, he's got that huge following on online. I mean, it's tremendous. That doesn't apply to the PGA, what they would like to do with him. What do you think he's going to end up doing? Stay with LIV for a while?
Well, he's got, another year, and I think really we won't know until Bryson's able to discern what is the future of LIV. He's under contract this year, so he doesn't have any choice. And he does have some leverage with LIV. If they are going to continue on, he's going to be the most visible player they have.
Right.
But it's also possible that LIV could start to show some signs of retreat, if not outright surrender. So he's time is on his side.
Yeah, that's the next question I was going to ask you. Do you think Liv's in trouble? Is the white flag going up?
Not as long as the public investment fund wants to keep funding a losing proposition. No, they can go on as long as they want to do that. They've got plenty of money to do that. The question is, at what point do they realize that there is no return on investment? There won't be a return on investment, and I don't know when they reach that moment of conclusion.
Yeah, well, and obviously this puts a big question mark, if not a period, on the relationship and partnership of LIV and the PGA. Talked about it last year. It was somewhat close as far as reports say, but now I think it's even farther away.
It was just about a year ago that that blew up. I think it was a year ago this month that there was a meeting in the Oval Office of the White House. Adam Scott was there. I think that Jay Monahan was there. I think that Yasser from the Public Investment Fund was there. And it was apparently at that meeting that the Public Investment Fund and LIV dug in and said, look, there isn't going to be a deal unless there's team golf. And I think the tour in Monahan or Adam Scott said, we're just not doing team golf. It just doesn't fit our model.
Yeah,
And I
except.
really, I don't think the two sides have spoken since that meeting broke up.
Yeah. All right. What's your opinion of the new PGA CEO, Brian Rolopp?
Well, as I wrote in the Global Golf Post this morning, Brian Rolopp's playing for keeps. He's decisive. He's according to those that worked with him at the NFL, he's whip smart. I'm told from my contacts in Pontevedra that he's not a golfer. He doesn't pretend to be a golfer, but he's listening to the golf people and trying to understand why the tour does things a certain way and what are the constraints that prevent them from changing that. On the whole, I think he's getting very positive marks from just about every constituency. I think we'll start to hear a little bit more from him during the week of the players as far as what his vision is and importantly, what the schedule is going to look like beginning either next year or in 2028.
What do you think the schedule is going to look like? I mean, we see now the big changes. I mean, from 125 to 100, which is going to affect a lot of players. What do you think the future is? Less tournaments, more money?
Somehow they're going to get more money. I don't know how you do that with less tournaments, but that is his goal. I don't think it's quite as drastic as people have been suggesting, and some TV people at CBS all but confirmed that for us last
Right.
week when we were together with them. The season is going to start a little bit later. I don't think Hawaii is going to be a part of it any longer. I think it could have started. If a year from now, it could have started this past weekend because there was no NFL. And I think there's a way for the tour to be a part of Super Bowl weekend. Maybe you finish on Saturday. Maybe you make sure you finish before the kickoff. But I think that, it's a big sports weekend in America. I think there's a place for the PGA Tour in it. I think where you're going to see some real difference, though, is with the FedEx playoffs. He wants to make a bigger deal of the end of the season. It kind of ends with a whimper. He wants to end it with a bang. And so, one or more, at the very least, the tour championship, you're probably going to see somewhere in California to take advantage of television in prime time on the East Coast. I think you could see a rota that consists of Pebble Beach, the Olympic Club, and Torrey Pines for that final event of the year. And I think in so doing, the playoffs are effectively going to leave Memphis because it's a little bit warm in Memphis in August. And the same can be true said of Atlanta as well.
Well, that'll be a big deal if they pull it out of Atlanta. How long, do you have any idea how long the contract is with the tour at East Lake?
I don't. I'm not sure anyone really does. But these changes might not be implemented all at the same time. They might be staggered based on, as you point out, some of the contractual obligations that they have. But I think that the relevant parties in both Memphis and Atlanta understand that this isn't possible. This is probable.
Jim, do you think that there are some issues with the fall schedule after the Tour Championship through the RSM Classic that's here at Sea Island? Do you think there's any of that in jeopardy after some of the contracts expire?
Well, I did until, last year when they added at least one, maybe two fall events. Now, one is gone. I don't think they're playing Sanderson Farm this year. I think the fall series is going to become really what it kind of was intended to. And it's a place for up and comers, for younger players, for kids coming out of school to kind of learn how to play at that level. So, double A or triple A baseball, to use a baseball analogy. And occasionally, you'll have a brand name player that might want to come out just because he likes the golf course at Sea Island, or he wants to get one more tournament in before the end of the season. But it is going to remain what it is, which is a secondary tour after the tour championship is completed.
Are you in favor of going from 125 to 100 as far as the cut? I mean, we obviously don't have a vote in that, but I've heard a lot of grumblings about it.
It's pretty harsh. Some really good players. I, for example, I don't believe that Jordan Spieth has a card going forward. If he does, it's really close. You've got some brand name players in that 100 to 125 bracket that are going to be cut out. And so I'm not really in favor of it. I get why they're doing it. But I and maybe I'm a traditionalist, but I like it the old way. I think 125 is a good number.
Well, I do too. And it obviously hurts some of the sponsors who had eight exemptions now, like RSM, they only have four, which makes it an easier decision for them because, the harder decision is five through eight if they have eight, but the one through four are pretty easy choices.
And then those. The sponsor exemptions are going to become more precious than they ever were before, also.
Yeah, start earlier as far as sending out letters or doing PR reports or sending out videos or something. But
That's right.
do you think that the tour is in jeopardy? I mean, we've lost two of the three sponsors of this year's events for next year. Do you think that there are some issues with sponsorships with the PGA Tour?
No, I think they're pretty solid. Farmers, that's their desire to get out has been known for several years, and so that's just kind of part of the normal churn that you see. And Century is expired in Hawaii, but they look like they're going to slide into the Farmers position, so you're really only down one. I think the sponsorship funnel at the PGA Tour is in awfully strong shape right now.
So, in your opinion, PGA Tour in good shape, golf overall in good shape?
I think the PGA Tour is certainly in good shape. It's in better shape than it was, say, 3 years ago when there was a fire drill about how to react to LIV golf. I think they're past that. The game has arguably never been healthier in America and really around the world from a participation point of view. This post-COVID period has seen extraordinary growth in participation, particularly among women and girls. Rounds played have been up 4 of the last 5 years in America. The equipment people are making good money. There are waiting lists at in most cities, at most private clubs. Tee sheets at daily fee courses are sold out during peak season from dawn till dusk. In my time in golf, which you know has been a long time, I don't know that I've ever seen the game in as healthy as it is right now.
I couldn't agree more. We agree on the pluses and the minuses. Jim, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for being with us. God bless.
Rich, thanks for having me on. Cheers.
Are you ready?
Welcome back. I'm Rich Stiles, and we're with John Wade, the director of golf at Ocean Forest Golf Club on Sea Island in Georgia. John, welcome back to the Back Nine Boys.
Thanks for having me, Rich.
All right, let's talk about the results of the Jones Cup that was just a few weeks ago. Pretty big event, great field. Tell us a little bit more about the winner.
William Sides, he's from Oklahoma, but plays at Southern Methodist University. I think he's a top 15 player on the PGA Tour U list. Fun fact about William Sides is he plays right-handed, putts left-handed.
Wow, never had that happen before, have you?
Yeah, and another first is we had our first player win with a lab putter.
Whoa. Well, that says a lot for the lab putters, but
Just up for the lab putter.
how unusual was that to see him hit right-handed like crazy and then putt left-handed? Have you ever seen that before?
Honestly, not at this level. I guess the closest thing that I've ever seen is Nota Begay used a bullseye putter, and right to left, he would putt right-handed. Left to right, he would putt left-handed. But I don't know that I've seen a player at this level do that. I'm sure there are some out there. Not a knock on them. Look, the bottom line is you got to get the ball in the hole. And if that means standing on your head and putting with your feet, these guys will do it.
Well, you had a pretty exceptional field this year. You had a lot of top players, not only from PGAU, but also just in the rankings of amateur players. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Incredible field, Rich. Actually, in terms of strength of field, it was the second best in the Jones Cup history. I think I'm going to tell you this correctly, but when you look at strength of field, you're going off world amateur golf ranking. So you're going off Wagger. And Wagger has a formula that they use where they're taking a percentage of your field based on how many players you have in your field. So what happened was we got a notification kind of during the tournament that it looked like our rating was going to be rather high. And then every Wednesday, Wagner updates itself. So the Wednesday after the Jones Cup, we found out we had a rating of 958, of which, if I'm not mistaken, 999 would be like if you had the best players ranked one through pick a number, but every single player played one, three. So we came in at 958. There's only two tournaments in the world that come in higher than that, and that is the US Amateur and the Western Amateur. And both of those events have considerably more players than us. But I think it speaks volumes to Ocean Forest, the golf course, the tournament, its reputation. A lot of people talk about the food and how they're treated, but to have that strong of a field come with just 84 players.
So, I mean, that's incredible. I mean, 958, and then you're only behind, behind two other bigger tournaments. Adding prestige to the Jones Cup, I mean, is going to be hard to do any more than what you've already done over the many years that y'all have had it, especially this past year. But what do you think that will do to the field for next year?
What's that old advertisement? The best advertising advertisement's word of mouth.
Sure.
I I honestly believe what happens, or what I would like to think happens, is that the players come here, and everything that we do for the Jones Cup is player experience first. That's what we're after. How do we make the players' experience unlike anything else that they would receive, or, you know, that we're trying to do? So I am hopeful that the players leave here and they go to other tournaments, college tournaments, whatever, state amateurs, pick something like, man, I played in the Jones Cup. It was unbelievable how they treated us, the food that they gave us, the golf course, the challenge, et cetera. Look, it doesn't hurt that we've had some pretty strong champions too. The individuals that have played in this event, like Scottie Scheffler played in the event, but didn't win it. But if you look just kind of randomly off the top of my head, DJ Trahan won the first one in 01. Luke List won in 07. Patrick Reed, 2010. Justin Thomas, 2012. Corey Connors, great Canadian player. Yeah. In machine and majors, 2014, Bo Hostler, 2016, Brandon Thorberry, 2017, Akshay Bhatia, 2019, Davis Thompson, 2020, Luvik Hebert, 21. I mean, it's pretty strong. And when those players are winning or have won your event, I think that speaks to players wanting to play in the event. And then you look at what these champions what they have done in their professional careers. If I'm not mistaken, of all of our champions, they have combined for 39 PGA Tour wins,
okay,
multiple majors, multiple Ryder Cups, multiple President's Cups, Olympics, and a host of others.
Wow. I mean, that says a lot for the Jones Cup. When do players begin to even look at registering, or you go through your invitation list? When will you start, or have you already started for next year?
Already. Top 20 of the previous year, as long as they remain an amateur,
will
automatic invite any past champion that is still an amateur will get a invite, which was really neat. This year we had two past champions play. We had John Peterson from 2011, who played at LSU, played the tour, then got his amateur status back. So he was a mid-am, if you will. And then Jacob Molesky, who plays at Notre Dame. He's our 2024 champion. And Jacob Molesky's already told me, he said, I can't wait for 2027.
Wow. Which is,
so we start watching, right? We start looking at key tournaments, NCAA, those type things, you know, kind of watching. We're watching the rankings. It's moving constantly. You know, right. It's moving. And then when we hit the summer, we're looking at the Elite Amateur Series. We're looking at some of the kind of the big kind of classic tournaments that carry some weight historically. We do like traditions here at Ocean Forest. We're also looking at, okay, how do we improve the tournament? We've already had one debrief, if you will. We'll have another one.
Okay.
In about another 10 days, and there's no stone left unturned. We'll look at field size. We'll look at how the exemptions are made. We'll look at tournaments. What used to be maybe kind of an early fall, hey, you know, we got the Jones Cup coming up, when you start looking, it's year round now. We're already looking at gifts. We're looking at, how are we going to improve the member experience? I mean, excuse me, the player experience next year. My team that I have here of professionals, they're just, I love them to death. They're just crazy. Like they've done like a PowerPoint presentation of, you know, down to like where trash cans ought to be on the golf course. Rich, you just gotta be bought in to do it. I mean, you got to like eat, drink and sleep it. And I think that adds to the success of the event.
Yeah. I mean, I've done the walking score. I've done shuttle, mostly walking score. And it's really kind of neat to walk around with these kids, college kids, high school kids, depending upon, but I had a great group. John Daly's son was 3 under going into his last hole and unfortunately double bogeyed. But I mean, boy, these guys can really play. I mean, they're ready at this stage to go play professional if they want to, if they can.
You're right. And I think you're seeing that success out on the Corn Ferry and the PGA Tour through this you would get into a tour event and really it was kind of, hey, here's what a tour event's like. Let's get your feet wet. Let's kind of show you the ropes. Now, these kids enter it now. Their mindset is, I'm going to beat these guys. I'm not here just to play and learn a little something. Yeah, I'm going to learn something, but I'm here to compete. And, you know, that just probably starts our way in junior golf. You know, the exercise that they're doing, the training that they're doing, you know, speaking about being all bought in, you know, at a young age. I mean, you think about Miles Russell, the number one junior in the world. He's been the number one junior in the world for 2 years. He's a junior. He's finishing his junior year in high school as we speak. He still still has senior year. This young man's played in two Jones Cups. He finished third in his first one last year, and then he finished second this year. So it just turned 17.
And a lot of people, when I was walking around doing scoring, a lot of them were looking at the overall scoring, not only of the group that I was with, but they were saying, oh, my gosh, this kid Miles, I mean, he's got a great chance to win it. And he did. Mm-hmm. So he came in third, then he came in second. So next year could be his year.
Yeah. It could be.
Yeah.
It could.
So when will you start sending out invitations for 2027?
We send those out October.
Okay.
September sometimes. We have a pretty good idea of the initial wave that we're going to send out. Right after the United States Amateur.
Okay.
But we kind of wait for a couple key events, and we do try to wait for the Mid-Amateur Championship to conclude, the United States Mid-Amateur Championship, because we always include the Mid-Am and the runner-up into our invite.
Gotcha.
It's February already. Like, it's only month.
I know. I mean, you're already planning next year. I mean, it is a great event. Do you have a dinner with them at Ocean Forest? Do you bring in past champions or some of the PGA guys to talk to the players?
It's a great question, Rich. In the past, that was done. Hey, we have a dinner. Have someone come speak. This is not discrediting any past champion or anyone like that, but these guys are so seasoned.
Yeah.
And just soon beat the guy that's talking, then listen to the guy that's talking. So one of the unique things that we do is that beginning at lunch on Thursday, the practice round, we give players and their caddies lunch every day, dinner every night, and starting on Friday breakfast every morning.
Wow.
They do come here and eat. And of course, Chef John's Saturday night steak and lobster is always the hit.
So that's why I have not been invited for the Saturday night thing, because it's steak and lobster.
Now, you may need to move from walking score to caddy to do
Ooh.
That.
Ooh, hey, I could do that. I might not help him on the range, but anyway. John, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Can't wait for next year. Thank you so much for doing the interview. You have a great day. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Rich.
You've been listening to the Back Nine Boys Golf Show with Rich Stiles. Go to back9boys.com for all things golf whenever you want it. We'll be back next week with an all-new Back Nine Boys at back9boys.com.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.